Craig Hoffman.
Those are the candidates. Now we get to play the game. Who's the worst?
The Hoffman Show.
Congratulations to the Jets. You finally didn't make one.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Boom, boom, boom. Drive slow, homie.
Busy, busy couple of days at Commander's Camp. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. We got a lot to get to with someone who lives that beat every single day. It's not my beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not my beat.
It is Sam Fortier's beat on the Washington Post. Of course, covering the Commanders. Sam, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Quick shout out to Anthony Haney for bringing me in to Drive Slow by Kanye. Late registration, that era, some of my favorites. So big ups to him. That made my day.
Excellent. We're here to make days. Well, I guess we'll see based off. You have to report the truth. We're here to make days. You just have to report the truth. And if that makes someone's day, great. But that's kind of the nature of a reporting job. But yeah, late registration era Kanye, like there's few better than that.
No, absolutely. That's, and you know, man, at least it's been a quiet few days out in Ashburn at Commander's Camp. So I'm sure we don't really have anything to talk about.
No. We'll see if we can scrape through for like 3 minutes here and then cut you loose, because I know that's what you like. Quick hitters that have no depth. I'm going to quickly move past that drive-by. So last couple of days, let's start with on-the-field stuff. And then we can get to Mills and we can get to everything else going on. Last couple of days, offenses looked better from everyone that's been out there that I've seen. What has worked the last couple of days for this offense?
For me, Carson Wentz balls out when he makes quick decisions and he's kept clean. And I think that bears out from what you saw last year in Indianapolis. I'll throw out the Philly 2020, but to me, that's what he looks, you know, the best at. And when he looks inconsistent, it's a byproduct of, oh, you know, the pocket's collapsing, or, oh, I'm holding on, you know, the first, second read wasn't there, and I'm trying to get through my progressions. Because the progressions in Scott Turner's offense are a little bit different than the ones he came from. So I think that's him processing. And so when you see him make quick decisions, as he has the last few days, that certainly helps out. It doesn't mean he's perfect. It doesn't mean he looks like Patrick Mahomes out there, but he's certainly better.
So one of the things that I think also can help him is actually giving him more. Like sometimes when an offense, especially for a veteran who like knows there's more out there, it can be so restrictive. And especially if they're stuck on a very basic play package and some of those plays are not ones that he particularly loves, that the more that Scott Turner gives him in terms of solutions, getting in right plays, you know, possibly getting to plays that he likes better, could certainly help him. Have you seen an expanded offense at all these past couple of days in any way, whether it's personnel groupings or just maybe like, hey, I don't feel like they've run that concept a ton during camp yet, as they've gotten deeper and deeper into their install?
Yeah, they're certainly using a little bit more of two tight end sets. You know, they're in 11 a lot, especially early. They've had some, you know, new scheme runs. He had an RPO that he actually, you know, kept and ran in for a touchdown in the red zone. I believe it was yesterday. So they've definitely, you know, incorporated some new things, made him look comfortable. And I do want to point out, because this has been a real topic of discussion, some of those struggles that you hear about are not always solely on Carson. Sometimes it's receivers running routes at different depths or different timing. We talked about that a little bit after the stadium practice. So while I think that Carson shoulders the lion's share of that blame when he's inconsistent, especially when he's, you know, throwing a slant behind Terry or something like that, it's not solely on him. So when people hear, you know, read our stories, like that part of the context should be included.
Yeah, definitely. And I've used the example of like if a receiver's got a 12-yard in cut and he cuts it at 10, if he does that, it's the receiver's fault. Now, it also gets to the point where if he does it every single time, Carson's got to make the adjustment and just throw the ball instead of the spot that it's coached to. You need to eventually hit the receiver. And we're also getting to the point in camp where he's getting enough reps with some of these guys that hopefully he's starting to learn some of those intricacies on any particular route with any of these particular receivers.
Exactly. And to me, once you develop that timing, once you can kind of find a strike zone, you know, through which to hit a receiver, then you start saying, okay, how are we really judging this guy? You know, what are the throws that are determining whether he is remaining as inconsistent as he was last year, or has he made progress. And I think Scott Turner does a really nice job of scheming things up, getting guys open, giving you easy answers. Like, I would expect to see a ton of play action. I think they ran at the third highest rate last year in the league. And Taylor Heinicke, you know, is obviously a different quarterback, but the gap between his productivity on play action and non-play action was drastic. So I would expect to see a lot of motion, a lot of play action, a lot of Scott Turner saying, hey, Carson, like, I'm gonna give you the answers as much as I can.
Sam Fortier of the Washington Post with us. A lot of what we just talked about does ultimately center around Curtis Samuel and his availability. And rather than asking you for an injury update, because we kind of know they've got a plan. He's going to play some. He's going to play not. All right, cool. We got it. Covered. I don't have to be on the beat to get that anymore. What I would have to be on the beat for is watching practice day in, day out, and seeing how the offense looks with and without Samuel. And obviously, there's only a limited number of snaps in 7-on-7, 9-on-9, 11-on-11. But from what you can see, is there a significant difference in production or in even what they're running when Samuel's out there versus when he's not?
I wouldn't say there's a significant difference in what they're running, but what he's capable of, he hasn't made one of those juke moves that he made on the second day of camp that Terry McLaurin said made him flash back to Ohio State. I haven't seen that level of explosiveness with him. And, you know, I know he recently did an interview and said, you know, when I'm out there, I'm 100%. When I'm not out there, I'm not. And to me, I don't think it's that cut and dried. I don't think it can't be that simple, because if he were 100%, he would be out there. And if he were 100%, he'd be making more of those cuts. So I don't think they're limiting him necessarily in terms of routes he can run. He's run a ton of screens, which, I don't think is indicative of his injury status. But I do think it's more complicated maybe than he wants to acknowledge.
Do you, like, when he's not out there, whether it's just because it's not his rep and there's, like, second stringers or third stringers or whoever out there, or on the days that he's over on the side field, are they still able to do a lot of the motion and stuff that they'll probably ultimately want to use him for? And who are the guys that are getting those snaps and in that role when they do?
Yeah, when he's not on the field, obviously you have Terry and Jahan, but for that third guy, most of the time is Deami Brown. Sometimes you've seen Cam Sims in there. You know, you've seen Dax Milne, some of those other guys, kind of step into that role. But it's not limiting them. I think it would limit the effectiveness, because defenses don't have to worry about Dax Milne or Cam Sims. They don't have to worry about them in the same way that you would have to worry about Curtis Samuel. But it's not noticeable, but it is noticeable, if that makes sense. And to me, like, that shows up most on, like, how much time and effort you have to devote to that guy. Because, like, defenses are worried about Curtis. That juke that we were talking about is kind of a perfect distillation. Even though we have extremely briefly seen Curtis at his peak, you know, if ever really in Washington, like, the ceiling on a Dax or a Cam Sims does not seem to be that high. So I think it's sort of, you see it in the negative. What is missing stands out. Because of, I think how explosive Curtis can be.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, like, the extremely surface level analysis is better players are better. Like, he's a special player, so obviously he's going to be better. But I also think back to a conversation I had, I think it was with McVay. It was either with McVay or O'Connell when they were here, and it was one of those years where everybody got hurt in Washington, and it's hard to remember which one it was because there were so many of them. But basically, he said, like, our offense right now, when we break the huddle, there's no one that you have to worry about. Like, we used to have DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon and Jordan Reed and all of these guys, and now we got nothing. We got Jordan Reed a couple times a year. And so there's no one that you have to play any special coverage to. There's no one that really scares you. And that's kind of, we talk about Curtis, like, every time the Washington breaks the huddle with Samuel, the defense has to know exactly where he is, and because they move him around that so much, that actually becomes difficult. Then you have to check and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't know, even with guys as versatile as Gibson and McKissick and as dangerous as Dotson is, I don't know if they have someone who can be that direct replacement for that.
One player I think this also applies to is Deami Brown. And obviously, when you have a guy with that sort of speed who is just running nine routes and averaging 20 yards a carry at North Carolina. It's going to take some adjustment in the NFL. We saw it a little bit last year, but obviously he struggled, didn't produce as much as they wanted him to. But I've seen Diami run a lot more short routes this camp, and if he can really nail the execution on those short crossers and threaten the DB to, you know, to break it off and go upfield, if he can give himself that sort of versatility and develop as a route runner in that way, I think his speed can function similar to what we're talking about with Curtis. He obviously doesn't have that running back experience. He doesn't have the positional flexibility and the ability to line up in all these different spaces. But I think his speed can serve the same function.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was actually going to ask about him. Now I don't have to because you told us. Sam Fortier of the Washington Post with us for Not My Beat today. Of course, Sam is the beat reporter covering the Commanders for the Washington Post. Craig Hoffman with you here on the Team 980. One thing that I thought was interesting from Jahan's comments at the podium today was he said some of the intermediate routes are starting to really develop, and that's been one of the slower, you know, things that has kind of come along. Everyone gets obsessed with the deep ball for obvious reasons. A lot of short, quick game stuff, it happens in a lot of modern NFL offenses, including this one. But I think the biggest difference maker for this team this year would actually be the intermediate stuff and Wentz's ability to drive the ball in those 15, 20-yard throws and get some chunk plays. What have you seen in terms of that kind of intermediate space between the short, quick game stuff and the, you know, let's uncork a ball 50 yards down the field deep balls?
John's comments were also interesting to me because I had not thought about them as much, because to me it seems like Carson has a better rapport with certain personnel rather than routes or depth. Like, he and Jahan really have clicked. I think it's taken he and Terry longer. So, and I will say that those intermediate routes that we're talking about, that is, I think, a thing that could open up this Washington offense, not just because of if they can get the timing down right, but it's just not something that they've had. Obviously, you know, people have seen and we've talked about the inability to throw deep, but the last 2 years, each of them, Washington has had the lowest average depth of target in the NFL. Like, you know, obviously that happens when Taylor Heinicke and Alex Smith and guys that love to check it down and get the ball out of their hands real quick are the quarterbacks. But when we're talking about Carson Wentz, it's not just pushing it down the field. It's also that intermediate range. If you can get Terry McLaurin consistently on a 15-yard in, things like that, that would really, I think, do a lot to open up the offense, you know, lighten boxes for Antonio Gibson. I've seen some development in those routes, but to me it's really stood out more as, you know, they're really clicking with a Cam Sims or a Jahan in that way, in the way that they're not clicking, I think, so far with Terry. Obviously, he has moments like that back shoulder fade at the stadium practice, but it's less about depth. It's more about personnel so far.
What do you think is the issue between Carson and Terry? Not to say there's like they don't get along. They're not friends. Like, this, just from a pure football standpoint, is it just the lack of reps because Terry did miss the offseason?
Yeah, to me, it's, you can tell that Jahan, I mean, he got to throw to for all of minicamp and all of the offseason workouts. And Terry, it's been, you know, a little slower. And I think he's probably starting to figure those things out. Terry talked about this on Saturday. And he was really pleased with that back shoulder fade. First time they had run a back shoulder fade in the red zone, and the timing was perfect. So I would say those issues, those kinks that Terry and Carson are working out are the byproduct of just the contract holdout. And I think it's, you know, if you still want to criticize the team for, you know, taking too long to get that deal done, I think a lot will hinge on these two preseason games, because realistically they're only going to play two or meaningful snaps in two, right? Like,
yeah.
If they can figure it out over the next 4 weeks, 3 weeks, I think then you're like, oh, okay, that's totally fine. They got up to speed. They're professionals. It's fine. But if they don't, if that lingers in a week one and a week two, then you start saying, okay, like, what was the long-term benefit to really trying to, well, win that contract negotiation with Terry when you have such a big year and you have a new quarterback?
Right. Not to mention, it would have been really great for Terry to get in and be able to mentor Jahan from day one, especially with that new quarterback, as you were just saying. Sam Fortier with us from the Washington Post, Commanders beat reporter on the Hoffman Show. All right, on the other side of the field, big story of the day that obviously blew up your day yesterday. what have you been able to learn about what happened between Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio, Sam Mills, whoever else was involved there, that ultimately leads to Sam Mills' dismissal?
Yeah, so Sam Mills, the dismissal, Ron Rivera was very emphatic. It was his decision. It was because of what he saw during the offseason and during training camp so far. You know, he really emphasized this was not because of the defense's underperformance last year, though I think plenty of people understood that you know, they needed more. And according to people that I've talked to, Ron, at the beginning of the offseason, when he's meeting with all his coaches, he told Sam, I need more from this unit. They obviously go out, they change the unit, you know, they cut Ioannidis, they let Tim Settle walk, they bring in Fedarian Mathis, and by, you know, early August, it's not working. It's still not working. He hadn't made enough changes, so he decides to fire Sam Mills. Today, he talked about watching Jeff Skinnina, the new coach, his energy, his interactiveness, the way that he was demonstrative and hands-on with the guys, and he said, that is what I was looking for, that's what I wanted. So to me, that implies that Rivera at some point told Mills, hey, we need more of that. And, you know, he didn't see it. So to me, it seems like why he made that decision.
Do you buy it? Because Ron's been working with this guy for a long time. Like, he knows what he was as a coach.
Certainly. I think there's, you know, he was one of the things that was interesting to me is that if you go back and look at it, those Carolina teams that he was the defensive line coach for are much different than the Washington teams. You know, Carolina had a lot of veterans. That was a Julius Peppers, Mario Addison, Kawan Short. Obviously much younger in Washington. And if you want to say, like, well, you know, he's had these guys for, you know, 2.5 years now or 2 years in a training camp, like, why didn't Ron make this decision earlier? That's a totally valid question. And to me, it sounds like if Ron had that meeting with Sam and said, I need more from the D-line, because 2021 obviously was not acceptable, particularly, you know, because they're two star edge rushers. It just, you know, Ron criticized their lack of discipline, especially in run lanes last year early before they got hurt. That's a totally valid thing. But if Ron says at the beginning of the year, hey, I need something from you, and then he doesn't see it and decides to make that decision when he feels like – there's no more to go. I do buy that. But, you know, that's just my sense from having talked to some people in the building. And you know, I get why there'd be people who are skeptical of it, but that's my sense of how it went down.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. On the defensive side of the ball, one of the other things that I think has been really interesting from this training camp is the linebacker spot, but maybe not in the same tenor that a lot of people have talked about it. Like, a lot of people have said, oh, God, how can David Mayo be playing over Jamin Davis? And then I talk to people about David Mayo, and everyone's kind of like, well, actually, he's not bad. Like, he's kind of good at the stuff that he's good at. What have you seen from Mayo? And then ultimately, can you put that in context about what that means for Davis, who still has a higher ceiling and is a first-round pick and you'd hope could be better than David Mayo at all of the things? But, like, realistically, if we take away the pedigrees and all that kind of stuff, where are you at with this linebacking core and specifically those two players?
Yeah, so I think the linebacking core overall is probably the weakest position on the team. I think there's a lot of concern there. I think Cole Holcomb will be fine at Mike. You know, he did a lot of those responsibilities last year. But in terms of Jamin and Mayo, like, Mayo has not been playing over Jamin except for a few snaps and a few plays, and then particularly in goal line. In goal line, when they go bigger, David is in. And like you said, he's good at stopping the run. He is good at being the mic and figuring things out and diagnosing an offense. That is what he excels at, which obviously Jamin struggled with quite a lot last year. So to me, David Mayo cannot be a long-term solution. I mean, my mind flashes back to the game in Philly last year where they had a running back run an angle route out of the backfield and David Mayo could not keep up with him. So it's like, but that's not his fault. You know, like, he's a 7-year veteran. We know what David Mayo is. So to me, you need Jamin Davis to take a step forward. You need him to be an off-ball linebacker and really compete for this team. You can't rely on David Mayo. But if but that's on the coaching staff and on the, you know, on the personnel department, I think, more than it is on David Mayo or Jamin Davis, if that's what your personnel grouping is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So with that said, would you try to make a move for Roquan Smith?
So here's the thing, is I've been thinking about this a lot. I think it is very, very unlikely that Washington makes that move. Because if you go back and look at it, Roquan Smith is 25 years old, coming off an all-pro season. In the last decade, the only comparable trade is the Khalil Mack trade in 2018 from Oakland to Chicago. And that was two first-round picks, two other picks. And even if and Khalil Mack was 2 years older, albeit he was a little more established, he had a couple all-pro seasons. But if you go back through that, I can't see them giving up that level of draft capital, even if you only give up one first-round pick and another pick. Like, I don't see them giving up that draft capital, because once you get him, you then have to pay him at least $17 million in APY and maybe $19 million, because Shaquille Leonard in Indianapolis and Fred Warner in San Francisco, kind of those two dudes at that position in the league right now, who I think Roquan Smith is, if he says he's those guys, like, I think he's that caliber. I believe him. I don't think you're going to be willing to pay $19 million in APY. I mean, this year they have $13 million in cap right now, but they could find that money. Teams, you know, have cap funny money all the time. But I just think the cost in draft capital and salary will probably be too much for Roquan.
See, that's exactly where I'm at. Because at first I was like, oh my God, is this like a gift from heaven? And then you realize they've got to make a gift or make a decision on paying. They got to pay Sweat. Young is looming, and they don't have room to pay anybody else. Like, they got to pay their own guys. And as good as Roquan is, like, the difference between him and Mack, as good as Roquan is, again, Mack was a pass rusher. Roquan's a middle linebacker. And unfortunately for Smith, the way the NFL has shifted over the past couple of years, that's no longer the premium position it used to be, because teams just don't run it as much.
Exactly. And like, to kind of go back to your point earlier, right? Better players are better. You hear Roquan Smith, one of the best coverage linebackers in the league, is like all of a sudden available or possibly available. And you go like, oh, that would do a lot for Washington. But just when you break down the numbers, kind of like positional value, as you pointed out about what that linebacker means. I mean, you saw what it meant to not have one last year, but I still don't think they're worth $19 million probably, especially when you've constructed your team the way you have. So it ultimately just probably doesn't make sense, even though it's like, hey, that dude's really good, and it would be good to have him on my team.
Right, right, exactly. And this is what it means to manage a team in the cap era. Like, you've got to decide where to spend money and where not to. They've made their decisions, and now they got to see if it's going to work. You can read Sam's coverage, WashingtonPost.com/sports. Sam, this was great. We will certainly do it again. Very much appreciate your time. Enjoy a cooler rest of the week, and then preseason game one on Sunday. The heat is over.
Oh, man, don't tell me the heat's over, because then it's coming back.
It's supposed to be, like, lows in the high 60s, highs in the low to mid 80s. Like, y'all should be, again, everything's relative, but you should be a lot better than it has been.
Man, this is going to get my mom off my back when she FaceTimes me and sees me a little sunburned. So I'm going to take the wins where I can get them. And I appreciate you having me on, Craig. Shout out to Anthony one more time. Always enjoy being on. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Sam, you're welcome. Oh, did you hang up? Maybe he hung up.
I think he hung up to her.
I was waiting for a hearty Sam Fortier laugh, and I was robbed of that. I thought that you're welcome was going to hit him hard, Anthony. Instead, it landed just so flat. It landed in sadness. Well, you know, you can't win them all. All right, Scott Jackson will join us next. We'll have more wins on deck despite that massive L.